I'm very touched.
Sorry.
Wendy.
Wendy. Thank you. You say, Wendy, you say you are very touched. I'm also very touched. Just from the few you said already when you presented yourself. So we need a mic. Is there a microphone around? Oh. Is it better now? Yeah? Okay, thank you. Are there technical difficulties? Can you say a word that we can see if...
Am I okay?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Can you repeat your name?
My name is Wendy Miller.
Wendy. So, this is under confidentiality. What we do now, just to know in advance.
Thank you.
And is it so far okay that we record it and then decide afterwards?
Yeah.
If we make use of it in what time? Yeah, okay. You're 65, right?
Well, I will be in 4 days. I'm close.
Very soon. At home or in London?
At home.
At home.
I go home 2 days before.
Yeah.
And the number is important to me, I guess, because I'm turning 65, but it's also important because my husband was very involved with aging, started the National Institute of Aging at NIH, and he devoted his whole life to helping people when they were 65 and older, and he died 5 weeks into being 65. So, at a very basic level of meaning, that like haunts me. I'm just like, how can that be? I mean, come on. That's, even a bad movie wouldn't do that. I mean, it just makes no sense to me. So, I was 59, and now I'm going to be 65. So the number seems...
The number seems...
Well, I was going to say the number seems important, but to tell you the truth, I think the reason it seems important is because though I am a clinician, I have not wanted to do this with someone because I felt I would be turning my life into a story. Like, oh, here's my husband, here's my daughter, here's what happened. I didn't want to do this.
You're not to do both.
Sit with someone and talk about it. And all of a sudden, I'm going to be 65 and I'm talking about it in front of people.
Is it really okay for you to do it? Because you said, I never wanted to do such a thing before.
It's scary.
It's scary.
Well, it's scary, but it's very motivated by the fact that I am affected by listening to you present. I'm affected by Emmys, and I feel that if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right now. So I think that's why I was touched that I'm doing this. I do want to tell you the truth. I'm shocked to find out how hard this is to reconstruct meaning and to care.
So what you're going to talk about is strictly strongly related to the loss of your husband and your own age, if I understand well.
Yes, and how to engage with my heart again, to care. I feel, I think what I said is I don't feel good in my skin. That's so weird to me, but most situations feel uncomfortable to me. I'm like, oh, I gotta go now, it's too hot, it's too cold, it's too loud, it's too whatever. The person said the wrong thing, the right thing. I mean, nothing is right.
Since the death of your husband? Before it was different?
Well, I think the death of my husband is like the what's that phrase, the last rock that's put on a wagon. You know, I mean, my mother died, my father died, I mean, from whatever, my 40s, 50s, you know, I mean, this process of losing loved ones. And I can't remember the words that you said this morning, but something about, or maybe Emmy said that, I don't really remember anymore, but that whole sense of like the self-narrative, the story of your narrative suddenly doesn't make much sense. I mean, all the words, like when I spoke to somebody the other day, I was like, my ex-husband, my late husband, my husband who died, well, I'm a widow, died. It's like all words sound like dead, 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 dead. That's what they sound like. How much can you say or not say?
Was that different in your life when you were younger?
I was just talking to my friend about that.
Yeah. How old was you when you encountered the first loss of a beloved one?
Six.
Who was that?
My great aunt. And I grew up in one of those families where my nana was part of like eight siblings, and we were all part of that household. But I just was talking to my friend at lunch about, I was saying, you know, do some people just come in existential? And we sort of pieced together that my mother, who was a war bride, she was from Algeria, met my dad during World War II. They married, had my older sister move to America, and her mother was going to come live with her, and she died when I was two. So just an hour ago, I started thinking about how maybe I got existential, like, what do you call that, through early. Maybe I felt.
Mm-hmm. So you hardly know your mom?
I know my mom. I hardly knew her mom. Not my mother died.
Yeah.
Her mother.
Her mother.
Yeah. No, oh my God. No, my mother. Fortunately, I got to have for a while. Never long enough, but a while. Mm-hmm.
So, in the age of six, you lost a very beloved person, a great aunt. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? Is this something which impacted your life, or was it quite natural and well kept in the family and well believed there?
I remember it because I had to go to school, and I kept thinking, well, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to be there. And I hadn't thought about this for a long time, but I was positive that she came to visit me after she died. I mean, I was positive that she would talk to me in my room.
Did she?
I think so. I really do think so. But in her family, meaning of my nana, my great uncles, they then all went on to live to be 96, 99. I mean, we didn't have, you know, I grew up in this multi-dimensional family with like the, you know, the Ashkenazi side that had the rag trade story and then the Sephardic on my mother. But on my dad's side, they lived to be serious elders. And then I marry somebody who studies elders. You love my family. I mean, God, you could go on and on with the 90-year-old, the 96-year-old, the 99-year-old, you know. And so that's part of it. I'm now living, you know, I'm 65 and I'm the elder in my family. I mean, I'm not the elder, my sister is 70, but I mean, we are.
Yeah.
And I am family to my daughter. Like, I grew up with all these generations. I have all this way of belonging. And now I have to figure out how to help her belong. And, you know, it's me and my sisters. And we're old, but we're not old in terms of what we grew up with,
yeah.
You know? So I'm just caught with all that. Like, and somewhere in there comes this voice of like, you know, and I don't even have my husband. I mean, who doesn't have a husband? I mean, like that, not me, who doesn't? I don't need to say it like that. I'm just saying, at this age.
Mm-hmm. So, as it turns out now, it looks like you are mainly touched by your own growing moment and your sister's own area, their age. And you don't even have a husband, so you lack somebody who goes with you, you lack your partner. And to me, it looks like you are touched by your own age. Is that correct? Is it what you are doing? Is that you are your turn 65? And your Ashkenazi side could live for 30 years more.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if you are from the Ashkenazi side.
Right. And if I do live 30 years more, I certainly don't want to feel it. I don't know. I mean, I don't see myself as somebody this disconnected or separate from caring. I mean, I tell myself what I care about. I tell myself, of course I love my daughter. Of course I love my grandchildren. Of course I must love art. I don't feel it. I have a studio that you could die for. I don't touch anything in there.
So you are caring, and you put it into words like, of course I'm caring for my daughter, for my grandchildren, for the art.
I don't feel it.
Of course you do it. You are bound into a tradition of life, into a context, into a meaning of life. Of course I'm born for that. And I want to do it, but I don't feel it. Was this always so, or did that change?
It changed.
When? Do you remember?
Well, it's been changing, let's say it like that.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately. Okay. Or after the death of your husband?
Definitely
after the death of your husband.
Yeah. I mean, have I felt... All right, here, let me say it like this. Because I lost my mother and grieved very, I had a lot of anger. Oh my God, I was really angry. Felt like she was stolen. But then we took care of my dad, and he lived for another 7 years, and my sisters and I took care of him really well, and he was my daughter's closest person, you know.
So you had a good time for living in care.
Yes, yeah. Yes. What I guess I'm trying to say is that I thought I understood something about grief.
Mm-hmm.
And what I feel now is that it doesn't feel at all like anything I ever trained in, learned about, went through. It doesn't feel like that. It feels...
Your actual situation, you mean, doesn't feel like something you have gone through, something you learned.
it feels, to be very honest with you, it feels like I feel it every second.
What?
This abyss, this disconnection, this... Well, here's a paradox for you. Philosophically or intellectually, everyone says this is the human condition. Everyone is going to feel this. But you know what it really feels like? I'm not part of the human condition at all. I'm all by myself in this horrible feeling. That's, if I'm honest. Yes, there are moments that I'm not. I wouldn't be up here now. That's why, I mean, something's happened to me in these 5 years, for sure. I recognize that. I know I'm better than I was. But that feeling is that all these words are about, meaningless, empty, I don't know, they've been up there. It's a moment-by-moment feeling.
Continuous.
Constant
since the death of the husband, or since when?
That's what I'm marking, but mm-hmm. I mean, if you're asking me if I have like a propensity toward loss or something, I don't know. I mean, I don't know anymore. I'm all right, but if you do have one. Thank you. This will be what people take away, right? You spend your life training and they'll go, but he handed her a tissue. She needed it. But she didn't even care that it came from his pocket.
So, since more or less 5 years since the death of your husband, I'm just asking you if I understand. You feel disconnected. You feel lonely. You feel you are no longer part of this human condition, of this humanity. You are put aside, put apart, separated in that way. Thrown on yourself.
Lonely,
exposed.
And
you have a good relationship with your husband.
Yeah.
So you really missed or lost somebody very important in your life.
And somebody I expected to just, you know, be with. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have already, you know, but.
What did you say? What did you lose with him? He died. He was your partner, he was your friend, he was maybe the closest person after your mom, but a very,
yes,
very close person. And in a very good relationship, you were somehow unity.
Exactly. I miss that. That's the loss right there. It's the soul body, in another word.
Mm-hmm.
It's the...
Yeah, soul body. In German we have a word, Leib, we say for that. It's not the body, it's the soul body.
Yeah. I mean, it's all of it. It's the relationship, it's the fighting, it's the loving, it's the father to our daughter, it's the...
This spiritual psychical union,
exactly,
which is divided into two persons,
right,
two bodies, but which is
human, which is one.
Which is one.
Yeah. Which is related to the other person who wants to come.
And which is one in the children.
Which is what?
In the children.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. And I'm the only one who watches that growth now. That's bittersweet, you know? I mean, I'm here, and I get to watch it, and I've done a really good job. Our daughter is 15, and she's in college, and she's all right, you know? So I must have cared, even when I didn't think I was caring, because... But that loneliness is the word that comes up, the loneliness for that. And then people will say, and, you know, I have sisters, I have good friends, I have wonderful community. It's not like I don't have people. But, you know, everybody says things like, well, there'll be another chapter for you. You'll love again. Or you'll, whatever they say. It's just, it all feels like, don't they understand I'm trying to figure out how to swallow and eat and breathe? And they want to know whether I'm going to be attracted to some new human being, you know, a stranger. It's just like miles from.
Miles
from I just want to feel, you know, feel okay. Then we can talk about what I could do. But to imagine that as if that's going to make me feel better doesn't make me feel better. It makes me feel like, oh, here we go again. Here's another human being who doesn't get it. I mean, I went up to Emmy the other day and just literally just said, I just need to hug you. Based just on the fact that I understood she got it. So there's not that many humans in the world who do. I didn't even need to say anything, just I have to hug you. You know, I'm just.
So you feel disconnected, you feel in an inner abyss or at the border of an abyss? You use the word abyss?
I'm not in it. I'm definitely, because I see light. I mean, I used to be under the covers in many ways. I don't know. I don't even know if abyss is the right word.
But the feeling of disconnection is a word.
That's it.
Yeah. And this throwing on yourself, throwing back on yourself,
yes.
Being alone, being lonely, which is not being, you are not alone.
Right.
But you feel lonely. You feel lonely because you do not feel. You remember that caring was something so important in your life. You like to do it, and you still do it on a functional level. In the tradition of what was a good life before, and hoping that it will show up again. But I don't feel it, you said. What do you feel? Did you ever focus that what, how you feel, what you feel? Is it numbness? Is it emptiness? Is it is it nothing, but how feel is nothing? I heard this is the let's say one central problem that you do so many good things but you can't feel it anymore. And all this started with the death of your husband. With the we could say end of your relationship with question mark, but something like something happened with the death of your husband. And something has changed since then.
My identity.
Your identity.
I mean, my identity is up for grabs over everything. Anything. I mean, who am I? You know, even the way you said that, like, and, you know, you get married, till death do you part. Okay, so he died, so I'm not married, it's over, I don't love him. Do I question that? Do I say, oh, okay, everything is up. I don't know the answer to anything. I don't know how to be.
But what do you feel?
What I feel is jagged, like, it's not nothing. It's like static on the old television sets, you know, that were black and white, where they weren't working, and you'd get snow, feel snow. Like everything is static.
Static.
Like a filter between me and
the world. And even your daughter and your grandchildren.
Right. I love them. I know I love them. I feel it in the moment when I'm like with them. How can you not? But, you know, feelings last. They're like, you know, like they wash over you. They massage over you. It doesn't massage over me. It like goes static. No picture anymore.
I'm now going to apply the method of PEA, looking at the first step to what? When you describe this, you look at the situation, when you are with your daughter, with your grandchildren, and you feel jagged, you feel ecstatic, and ecstatic. How does this feel like? How do you personally feel?
I want to get out. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I can't see. I can't. I want to flee.
Yeah. But this is already a reaction to something you feel, you conceive, you have emotion. There is something. How do you feel? Do you feel like amputated or like bleeding, or do you feel pain? Do you feel to be a helpless child? Do you have any image you can take to describe or how you feel? Do you have any feeling of how it is for you most of the time since the death of your husband? How do you feel personally, yourself?
Disconnected is the only
disconnected. Thing. And how does it feel like to be disconnected?
I mean, how far I should go, but I mean, let me say one thing. When 4 days after my husband died, I got shingles in my ear. Shingles.
Shingles. Mm-hmm.
Which is like a virus of the nerve endings. I don't have it anymore, thank God. But that metaphorically is the answer to what you're asking. I feel like I have psychological shingles now, not physical, but I feel like there's that static I'm describing is that whatever normally kind of like is a light bulb that goes yes to life, to people or to your heart or whatever, it's not blinking. It's just not. And I'm used to being a person who's engaged and you know,
sure.
So it's just uncomfortable. I don't imagine that we're gonna solve it as much as I'm saying. I think I'm really saying that this thing called reconstructing meaning is really hard because it's physical. It's not just emotional or psychological. It's somatic.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, I kind of feel like the best I can do is just survive until my system...
Yeah, this is already a meaning. This is a reconstructed meaning, to survive, etc. There is something else going on. I don't think this is primarily a theme of reconstructing meaning.
Okay.
It is primarily a theme of reconnecting to yourself.
Yes.
And finding what is already there within you, not in the outside. This cannot be resolved by caring for sister or grandchildren or whatever. You are torn apart after this. the death of your husband. With experience, prior experience, it's in the same direction, losing your beloved people, because you are so seemingly so connected to the beloved people. So when you lost your mom, it was also kind of amputation, I can imagine. And now that happened, I don't know, not even know how many years later, but you lost your husband and you were so connected and such a good, you seem to be a very relational person. And you're just torn apart when I'm so much connected and so involved and engaged, and I lose these persons. And the last one is the husband. And since then, I'm checked. I'm out of water somehow. I know what to do because I have a life history, and you are a reflected person. And people are like, you know. But all this, what you learn, doesn't work anymore. So forget about it. This is what you mean. You don't even have to restore something. Just to be with what is there. Just to look at what is there. What is there? Your husband is no more there. He died. This must have been a very painful experience. Your other half of yourself, as to say, he went away. Who am I? Now, you say my identity. But it's even more than your identity. Is no more there. What do I feel? What comes up? How would I feel without him? Do I feel I'm still alive, don't I? What do I feel? Do you feel like being dead? You're not going to die. You can't. You have your duties. They are committed. But can it be that it feels like being dead?
Definitely.
It feels like being dead.
Definitely. It feels like being a shadow.
Like a shadow.
Like I can see me functioning. I can see her.
What you did right now, for me, is quite a step. You said, I'm not going to die. You have such a strong will to survive, to continue, to be there for your beloved. They need you and you need them and you want to be there for them. But your feeling, after all, is like being dead. Definitely. To be a shadow now, a shadow is not the body with blood and muscles and flesh. It's the shadow of that. So you are, does this mean you want to say that if you feel reduced to a shadow, reduced to a dimension which is much below to that what you have been before, as long as your husband lived. Is it that feeling that you feel? You feel to be like a shadow and almost dead. Also, you don't want to be dead, but this is up there. But when you connect with your heart, you feel like emasculating. Mm-hmm. Is it that? Mm-hmm. Is this really me, what remains after my husband? What's his name?
Gene.
After Gene has gone. Does this still feel like being alive? And my heart tells me, my life has gone with Gene. Is that true? Is it?
Well, I think that actually, as you say that back to me, I realize that I care about something because I mean, you're right. It's a reduced version. That's the mm-hmm. right. That's the right phrase. But I care to be here. I know that very well.
Yeah, sure. No doubt about that.
Yeah. So maybe that's the angst that it, you know, I have to. Yeah. Maybe that's why it's so hard to live in the skin, because I don't really recognize this as like enough or good enough, but. It's certainly better than it was 3 years ago, so like
yeah.
maybe 3 years from now it'd be better than this. I mean, I don't know, but. Mm.
Yeah, you have your hope in life, and you are very resilient and tough and clever and bright and convinced and engaged to continue in that, but you are somehow like empty to me. This is my picture I get from you. Mm-hmm. Is it true? I don't know, but I'm mm-hmm. just asking you. This is how it looks like to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that that's a fair description.
This is this being reduced to shadow. And I dare to use the phrase that my life has gone with Gene. Mm-hmm. Is that so? Is it so?
Well, this is this is, I guess, the difference between feeling and reality. Because mm-hmm. I could sit here. I mean, I'm not going to, because I know there's other people who want to be here. But there are ways that he is here. We wrote together. That book is going to get published this year. Our daughter is in college. She just sent me her grades. I mean, there are things, and he does them with me. I know he does them. Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I know that. Mm-hmm. So there are things. So it's really about holding the paradox or the tension, I guess, between what it feels like internally and then what is actually going on. Yeah, yeah, I mean, maybe somebody yeah. on the outside, you know, when I yeah. go talk to my friend later, she'll say on the outside, you know, I see this and this mm-hmm. and this. And maybe this is all about how maybe my inside is just disconnected from my outside, you know, and that when they get closer together, there won't be so much static. Maybe that's maybe that's what I'm actually saying, which frankly feels a little better to me to think that could be possible. It's a thought, but either way, it's better than feeling like a reduced shadow that is just going to be disconnected in the dark.
But your feeling is that of a reduced shadow, and it takes courage to look at what I really feel, to take it, to accept it, to be with, to take it as my reality, against my rationality, against my outer life, against my intentions. The feelings in our understanding are perceptions of the reality in point of view of their impact on my life. The death of Gene has a great impact on you, on your living dimension of you as a living being. And this is not a rational impact. Rationally, you are so developed and clear, educated and this works perfectly, but it is not filled with life. And so your feeling is telling you, standing. Look at that. You are caring for your grandchildren, for many people. But your life is not there. Your life is since the death of your dream. It feels like being there. And somehow, this is a question which comes to me. Can you just take it? As the true feeling you have. Therefore, it's a truth. It's an emotional reality. I feel much worse than I should do cognitively. But I feel somehow, I say destroyed, I don't know if it's your word, but somehow, reduced to a black and white TV check. Mm-hmm. Emotion. Mm-hmm. The impact on what it has on my life is so strong. Mm-hmm. Can I allow myself to feel it that way, which is against my conviction? I want to live. Mm-hmm. But my heart tells me I lost so much, I lost something so important. I lost my heart. Mm-hmm. You say you would flee, you would like to run away. When you look at that situation, what do you feel? But when we take it, and if you can hold it for 2 minutes together with me, this feeling, the shadow, reduced to a being a reduced version now, and say, okay, yes. The death of Jean makes me a reduced version. This is the truth. I'm going to work on it, but I feel it that way. Mm-hmm. Can you stay with that? Can you hold it? Can you be? And if you look at it, what would be your impulse? What would you automatically, spontaneously, most likely like to do? Not rationally, not thought about, just out of the impulse. Being so much reduced. Can you hold it? Mm-hmm. Is it dangerous? Is it a threat? Or is
no.
It?
I think this is a long-term question.
It's a long-term question.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but here you can see, you can describe if it makes sense, or if you can keep it, you can hold it. And what it does with you, when you hold this inner reality you got after the death of your husband.
Right.
But somehow, I somehow, not in the totality, but somehow, I'm a shadow. No.
I mean, you know, maybe a piece of disconnect it has been that I wanted to run from it, or that it just takes so much just to breathe into it. But, and I haven't liked it. I mean, we could name a million things. So, I think it's a long term. I mean, my answer to you is yes, but I don't have an answer that's like a. I can't be the perfect client here. I don't have an answer like this is what I'm going to do with it. But I can say I get that maybe meaning making is just that. That is the truth. Not to turn that truth to something that I think is going to be better. But the truth is that that is what it is like. I mean, it's just, you know, that feeling I was saying when, like, inside your system goes, yes, yes, you get it. That's what you're asking. Can I do that to this feeling in myself? Can I have this feeling and say, you get it. You are naming it. It is what it is. And I will, whatever.
And I let it be as it is. And I don't forbid my feeling to be how it is.
Or blame everybody else for not seeing it. Or
nothing is wrong.
Right. I spend a lot of time in that.
Yeah. It is as it is. I can let it be. I can take it. And I can experience by accepting it that I also can be with that feeling. Mm-hmm. And then it's a long term, yes, you say, when I take it, you will later on, maybe even now, start to understand what it means. And you will come to a new grasping of your love, of this greatness of love which you have and which is still there because you are writing the book with your husband and it goes on. But allow yourself to be somehow destroyed after all this, because you are such a strong lover, and you lost your life content, or one of the life contents, and this hurts so long. And the fact is, this is detrimental for my life. But you are resilient, you will recover. But let it be and take yourself. And then you are reconnected to yourself. And when you are reconnected with yourself, you are reconnected with yourself. How does this look like for you? How do you feel? Thank you. I think, for respect of this, make no problems. We all are very grateful to you. You were so clear and so open and so sincere and upright and clear and and willing to share such a deep existential reality with us. It was very moving and very much touched. And I have the impression of you as being a very strong, loving personality, which has possibly to go on the next 30 or 35 years.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Maybe you may remain here a bit more, because I just say a few phrases and then I give it over to Emmy. And what did I do? You may say, I did nothing. And somehow that's true. I think I did nothing. But I was there. I was with you. And I, in this phenomenological openness, I let enter in me, I looked at my impressions, at what I feel. I have empathy, but part of empathy in phenomenology, I get touched by a reality which I has to discover and synthesize and find my picture bring it to me, and then we have seen and you appeared in this strength, relational strength, which seems to me so enormous. And this touches me most. You just letting yourself. That's the point. Thank you. I made a big use of the method of personal existential analysis. I did almost the first step of it for those who are aware of it or know it, but this is not so important. We do not analyze it in detail now. You have seen a process, and I'm very interested now what Emmy, with her capacity, phenomenological capacity and experience, sees would have possibly done differently. What you would, if you can find a comment or say something.
I'd like to ask Wendy to comment on that, really. I don't think it's
up to me micro.
To say. Yeah, I've got a microphone, it's okay. I would be very interested in hearing what you make of it all, and I was particularly interested in why you felt able to stand up there in this big room full of people. And, you know, even though you say you haven't been able or you haven't wanted to talk to anybody about it, I found that very, very interesting. You know, what I heard there was I wasn't ready to talk to anybody about it. I didn't want to. You were hugging your static to yourself, staying with yourself. So what gave you the courage or the trepidation to actually sit in that chair and to start tackling these huge issues so publicly?
Well, I'm a sculptor, number one.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at this room, it has something to do with this room. Like, this circle, there's the fishbowl,
yeah.
And you're in it. And I have heard you now for days, and then your keynote today. So I could go on and on. My personal mentor is Paolo Canil, who is from Switzerland, expressive arts therapy. You remind me of him. You sound like him. So I transferred onto you right away. Right away. You opened your mouth 2 days ago. I don't even know what you said. I transferred right away.
So that's what you were seeking.
I was definitely. I mean, I didn't come here thinking that, but all of a sudden, when we got in here, I was like, well, God, they're going to look for somebody. Just a circle. It could be me, you know, and I turned to my friend who got me here, so she's in that outer circle. She's the only one I know out there, so I know she's there, and I've known her since I was 20.
Yes.
So she's my dearest friend, and she's in the outer circle, and you're in the next circle, who I knew I was safe. So it was kind of like, I mean, to tell you the truth, I mean, my heart was pounding when I said it, and then I even turned to Emily and thought, well, maybe that's all I have to do. Maybe that's enough. So all of that is part of it. And then the other part is that, I mean, you're right. I've been working on this, with this. I'm writing. I'm in it with my husband, with these ideas, you know, that we're at the fine, it's going to publications. I've been in it. But it's a very isolating, kind of lonely process. My husband was a writer. He loved this process. I find it like, oh, my God. I'm at the computer again, you know, it's hard. So maybe I was primed. Maybe that's part of it. You turning and saying you didn't do anything, though, that's really not right. I mean, yeah, I can tell you exactly what you did. I mean, what happens when you're in this, and who's the person who's worrying about dying and his wife, and because it's the same thing. It's, yes, it's that tragedy fear. It's that worry that, like, your identity and your life is going to be taken from you, and I get that, and I'm in it. And the moment that somebody mirrors back something that is a disconnect, I would be gone. That's what I'm telling you. I would be gone. So I didn't want to risk that. I mean, I risked it for my daughter at a certain point when we needed to, but you can be sure I handpicked who I was sending her to, et cetera, et cetera. I risked it in terms of talking to, you know, hospice, whatever they're called, my hospice worker who would call me, you know. I was amazed. I kept thinking, wow. How do you know to call me on Thursdays? She's like, well, you told me you don't work on Thursdays. I had no memory. I had no... So it's been all these gradations. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is that your mirroring capacity, even when you would say something wrong, and then you would catch yourself. You said ecstatic at one point, and then you went, no, static. You caught you, and you paid attention. And I think you said the other day in your keynote, you know, that the more seasoned you get, then you say the right thing more often, and that's kind of a bad thing, because when you don't say the right thing, it forces the person to say, well, that's what happened, you know. And you'd be saying something, and it wasn't wrong. You were circling. If you were wrong, I can just tell you, I probably would have, I don't know, I would have left already.
But that is what happened, isn't it? You circled a lot of the time. You were really circling. Mm-hmm. And you were taking these notes. I would never take notes when I was a client at all. I would really sort of zoom in and focus in and see if the client can show me where they want me to get to. But it's a different method. You were sort of, you know, going around in circles. But what you did is that you kept coming back each time, and you wanted to pierce through the misunderstanding. You wanted his attention, and you wanted him to understand.
I did, because he was looking right at me. I felt your care. I mean, I didn't feel I was sitting next to the intellectual describer. I felt like I was sitting with somebody who really was trying to understand what I was saying. And so even if he was circling, you were in my zone. And so I was very there.
Yeah. And I was very interested in the point where you asked her the name of her husband, because I was sitting here thinking, I still don't know his name.
Yes.
The first thing I would have asked you was, what's his name? Describe him to me. Who was he? Why are you so terribly upset that you've lost him? Who was he to you? And I would have wanted you to sort of get back into that and share that with me. Because I still don't know that. I still don't know why you're so disconnected and so deeply bereft, which is what you are. Do you know?
Yeah.
Why?
Because in the same description as I'm saying, it's okay if I call you Alfred?
Yes. Is it?
In the same way as I'm saying I felt seen, I felt whatever that is, that's how I felt.
About Gene?
Yes.
Gene saw you.
Yes.
He was right in there.
Yes.
And that's what you wanted here today, is Alfred.
Exactly.
You wanted to recover some of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying about that disconnect is that I feel very often unseen, even by people who love me, because people who love me want me to be better. And so they want to tell me how I'm going to get better. And so they tell me.
But actually, what you came to with Alfred today was to say, it's really bad.
Exactly.
And I had to sit with that for a bit.
He did not try to move me to a place. He, at the end, said, by the way, in sitting with you, seeing how horrible this is, I see your strength. I could accept it then. If you said that 10 minutes before, 20 minutes before, 15 minutes before, I would feel, here we go again. You know? I mean, and talk about feeling. That's a terrible thing to feel like people who love you, you're mad at them because they want you to be better. I mean, come on. You know, so I'm always having to say, okay, it's my daughter-in-law. She loves me, so she's wishing that I would date or, you know. But it's hard to do that because you feel unseen over and over again.
But
and
of course, because that's her distress. She's dealing with her.
Exactly.
Sure.
So you're managing other people's anxiety.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I mean, she can't manage your anxiety.
That's right. No.
You can't expect your daughter to understand how really hellish it feels to you, can you?
No. Exactly.
Nobody can understand it. I can't understand it. I don't want to understand it.
Right.
It's too close to the bone.
Well, that, by the way, I have to just say this for everybody here, that's the most honest statement that anybody, I mean, my friends who have said that, I don't understand and I have to tell you, I don't want to because it's too scary. You know, I can accept that because I think that's honest and that's really true. Or my friend, Paolo, my mentor, when he found out that Jean had died, and I was telling Emily this, that he wrote to me and said something like, you know, you are now going to be the guide into a place that we all will go, because I think he used, now that I think about it, I think he said the Jean Wendy soul body, or I don't remember what word it was, but it was a word that that held us together in that way. And I guess as we're talking, I realize that why I'm so bereft is that I don't feel seen in the world. I don't have my mother, who of course is the ultimate person who sees you always, you know, and then I don't have my dad. And I was fortunate enough, second time around, to marry a really great, phenomenal person. And when this book comes out, I will send a copy to both of you, and then you will know about it. But and so I think that loneliness or that disconnect or whatever is, or the shadow, it's like moving around unseen. So in answer to your question, oh my God, I just got seen by a... It's not that you don't all matter, but I don't know you, so I don't worry about whether you're seeing me or not. But I guess maybe that's why most conferences I go to are in my field, so I'm not going to get up in front of everybody.
But it's amazing, isn't it? So
yeah.
You feel unseen, and now you're seen by hundreds.
Exactly.
People, and these cameras.
And I'm, yeah.
Anyway. So how does that change things? Or how does that seem to you? Was that a good thing?
It's kind of funny.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny.
It's paradoxical.
Here's a new tissue, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
But do you accept that you're being seen? Do you feel people get it?
I do. I feel a little guilty here, though, because I feel like I know there are other people who want to be here. And
well, it's
I don't know.
It's true.
It's I'm not going to feel the guilt, to tell you the truth, because I got enough bad feelings. I'm not going to add that one. So no, I'm very grateful.
So you got what you needed.
I got what I needed.
And that feels good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think we all feel very grateful. Very grateful that you showed us this way, this aspect, this depth of how we can be together with others and with ourselves. And when we are also with our feelings and embrace them, we can be so close to other people. And there's no gap anymore in between. And this makes me very grateful. Thank you for giving us this and for sharing with us your deep, long-lasting experience and the greatness of your loving heart. Thank you.
Goodness. Thank you.
Thank you. Emmy, thank you very much for your good comments. And thank you, everybody. I think this is and we can have it on tape when we say, so thank you.
Thank you so much, really. I'm so appreciative. Oh.